Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Server Administration within WebSphere Integration Developer Version 7. Today's presenter is Jason Ancrum. Jason became part of application and integration middleware technical support and customer service, specifically in the IBM WebSphere Integration Developer team in January 2010. In this role, he is responsible for identifying and then subsequently working to remedy WebSphere Integration Developer product defects. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Jason.
Thank you for the introduction. Good morning, everyone. My name is Jason Ancrum, and I work with the WebSphere Integration Developer Service Team out of Research Triangle Park. So that's RTP North Carolina Lab. Just a little personal background. I'm going into now my second year, as Joseph alluded to, with the WID Tooling Team. Previously, I worked with Runtime staff, also here in the same location, Raleigh-Durham. A few years before that, I worked outside of integration software completely with a development capacity on a node management product with Tivoli Group. So again, I welcome everyone, and let's get right into the material. Slide 2, please. This is the agenda, which I prepared this presentation with the beginner to WID in mind, but the seasoned operator can still benefit, I think. As I cover the material, some pain points and issues raised in problem records. So if you look here at slide 2, you'll find that I try to construct a flow directly post-install to new server start and most everything I could think relevant in between. We will again state our objectives in a brief introduction, considerations when deciding server types, the profile to server relationship, instantiating a new server, where we will spend quite a bit of our discussion, runtime modes, where I will outline differences between a server in debug versus traditional start mode, troubleshooting the startup, and where to look when pursuing our own problem determination, what you can expect to observe at startup, how to influence the runtime behavior. Finally, I will enumerate the various options to starting the test server inside the WID user interface. A summary of that covered where I will again present the major points. We'll conclude with that. We've added at the very end additional WebSphere-related resources and Q&A. Slide 3, please. This is simply a formal abstract. My apologies for what seems to be a run-on, but this presentation will discuss server startup inside the WebSphere Integration Developer Version 7. What settings can influence startup behavior, effective troubleshooting, guidance around performance and tuning, hot deployments, differences in connection type options, and alternatives to starting servers inside the workbench. Slide 4. Deciding on target runtime. So what I have listed here are what I understand to be frequently utilized runtime environments under the umbrella of course, WebSphere brand servers. There are, however, other server types available, but to achieve the stated goals of this technical exchange, we will focus on WebSphere Process Server, WebSphere Enterprise Service Bus, and WebSphere Application Server. So where you publish those projects developed in WID Workbench should be an organizational decision. And so you want to reach a consensus based on, of course, your business requirement. There are some other factors that should affect any such decision, including scaling, cost benefit, licensing and legal, hardware software requirements, limits on customization, and some other contributing factors. What I recommend to developers and even project managers that are hampered with deadlines or working primarily with SCA, then a standalone process server should be a safe choice because it can essentially handle a superset of module types, including those with human tasks or containing maybe versioned business processes, et cetera. Building mediation modules that include complex flows, then ESB, Enterprise Service Bus, should accommodate your needs. For generic J2EE applications, then I typically advise WAS as Webster Application Server, and that should suffice nicely as target. Let's move on to slide 5. Test environment profiles. All right, for those operators, administrators who have not been responsible for installation or possibly even need reminding, as some of us do, including myself, the integration developer, both install and upgrade, is composed of two segments. So Webster Integration Developer Workbench install upgrade, that'd be one phase. And then secondly, a test environment install upgrade, which includes installation of a full-blown application server. And a little later I'll explain how to troubleshoot one, maybe even both phases. So ideally there's a WPS or WESB test environment profile created when WID is installed. And very important, I think this is noteworthy, that the profile to server is a one-to-one relationship, and there must be a valid profile available before instantiating a new server. There's a useful setting I found from WID preferences where a user can perform a check for valid profiles and servers during the Workbench startup. From WID preferences, what you do is in your toolbar, WID preferences, you navigate to server, Webster Application Server. And then you'll find this aforementioned setting to be your second checkbox from the top. And this often comes in handy if you come in possession of a workspace that once had another owner maybe, or even a shared environment amongst a defined user group. This way you can locate profiles without painfully searching or having to go off and creating a new profile unnecessarily. Additionally, you can run the profile management tool, affectionately known PMT, allows for creating new and or augmenting an existing profile. And to reinforce an earlier point, you must have at least one profile to consider yourself in possession of a functional installation. At the bottom of slide 5, I've included for reference the physical location of the PMT executable. So it's just for example, it's my directory structure. Your install root is appended with an underscore WTE for Webster test environment, and then you continue to drill down into the profile management folder, and then it's bin. Slide 6, please. Creating a new server. So we'll jump right into instantiating new. So from any perspective with a server's panel, following instructions I found to be valid. So what you want to do is change your focus by clicking the servers tab and right-click for context menu. And it's now relatively straightforward from here, being new and then server. And I've also included in the bottom right some shortcuts, shortcut key, Alt, Shift, N, and then you continue to follow on other and then server, server. Slide 7. Once this new server wizard opens, then you'll find the server's hostname field pre-populated with localhost. But here you likely want to make sure you specify fully qualified machine name or IP address. In the event you have some stringent security provisions, security configuration. In the top right, you can access and search remote manager update sites to download and install support for your new server. And so, given your local configuration, with respect to that, you will be given a complete list of server adapters to download and install. And this is really quite nice because you avoid having to go outside of the UI to complete this activity. So if you click within the server type listing for your server of choice, you'll notice the fields at the bottom, server name, and server runtime environment will change accordingly to reflect your selection. So server name can be any arbitrary naming you decide, but we do recommend that you come to an agreement within your organization around some sensible naming convention. At the immediate right of runtime environment is an add link where you can specify Web3 application server installation directory by browsing for it on your workstation. Server runtime environments will allow for updating your runtime stubs under WID preferences and then proceed to server runtime environment. Slide 8. The continuation of creating of a new server. And so this is the next settings page where users can begin selecting profiles from a drop-down containing all available profiles. And so adjacent to the profiles drop-down, and as I believe we discussed earlier, you can manage profiles by clicking Configure Profiles. And what this does, it accesses your WID preferences, runtime environments section, and you can even invoke the PMT tool from there. Quite useful. So under connection types and administrative ports, we advise that our customers allow for automatic assigning of connection settings, but if, however, you have a good understanding of connection types and manually defining your ports, then this can be accomplished at the second radio button. Immediately under that, you have an option for running with or without resources within your workspace. And then your final section is security. And with the security is enabled on this server checkbox, you'll find yourself unable to proceed unless you do supply UID and password. And as a convenience, you can test the provided security credentials by clicking Test Connection with these Authentication Settings field. Slide 9. This is your final panel within the wizard. From here, you can publish to server your modules, but as also, again, a best practice possibly, just quite some time working with the product, we recommend that you defer this action until after you have started your server for the first time. And you can simply skip this activity by clicking Finish, the lower right. And as a useful note, occasionally an administrator might find it necessary to remove modules from the server. And for example, if you have modules that you no longer need to test, you can purge your runtime of those, and you should seriously consider removing them from the server so that they do not needlessly impact the performance of your server. Slide 10. Server configuration, also seen here as your server overview. And you'll notice it contains some values that you should be familiar with as you specify these very values when creating your new server. Also, another important note I'd like to mention that the same can be achieved by accessing a running server's configuration by right-clicking your server, then administration, run administrative console. So we have covered most of these properties. You might notice here, with the exception of timeout, which is defined in seconds for startup time allotment, and also an accompanying stop. These values might need to be amended depending on the amount of modules, supplemental libraries, and other dependency material, et cetera. So after you complete amending these values to match your business needs specification, then you want to file save to accept the changes, or alternatively, shortcut Control S. That's another important note at the bottom right. If the server is already running, you want the server to pick up the changes, you might require a restart. Slide 11, please. Continuation, now we're focusing in on the connection types. And for the purpose of this discussion, we'll just introduce the three options used for communication between the development environment and the server. So your first connection type there with the corresponding ports 9633 and default port being the same is IPC, and we recommend this for local server instances. Remote Method Invocation, RMI, uses ORB Objects Bootstrap port and is designed to improve communication and performance with the server. If there is a firewall between the development environment and the server or some other unknown security provision, then you seriously want to consider the SOAP connector port rather than ORB Bootstrap port RMI. So SOAP connection type is designed to be more firewall compatible. A tip, if by chance you find a delay in your server changing status from starting to started, then we advise toggling between the available types that we just outlined and attempting yet again another startup. Slide 12, runtime modes. So this graphic below to the immediate right of debug and traditional start illustrates first a server started in debug mode, then another image with the server running in traditional start. You can arrive at either startup by right-clicking for menu and then start or debug. Next slide, 13. Below you see the debug view, which is where you would control the execution of component instances and alter their state at runtime. And so once you create and start your component instance, then this debug view you see here in the figure is populated with what we call component-related entities. Also in this figure, you'll notice that we have two entities, with one being a component thread associated with ID 46855, and the status is currently in a suspended state. The second entity is referred to as a stack frame, which consists of the component name and the stack frame information. So the stack frame is simply a location indicator that shows where the component thread is currently paused. For example, in our figure, the stack frame identifies the business process, which is named main process.bpel, and the stack frame information suspended at receive. Stack frames are identified by a corresponding symbol. Unfortunately, we don't have them listed over in the lower right, which is a prepared key. But I'll still list a few so you can understand that they do exist and research further on your own if interested. But some of these stack frames are business process, business state machine, BO data map, business rules, visual snippet, and lastly, mediation flow. So I will discuss what we have here is the three stages and associated symbols of a component thread lifecycle. Here in the lower right, so you see we have suspended, running, and terminated. Let's move on to slide 14. So most of your frequently used perspectives with servers will offer a server logs panel, also even maybe a console tab. But I've added here at the bottom of this slide where you can view the server, the start server, and the system out logs. So along with being able to view this in the UI, you can go outside and access the flat file and perform your own self-diagnosis. But one clear advantage to viewing the logs within WID is the filtering you can perform against the entries. You can also avoid file locks and immediate changes to logs not being missed that frequently occurs when you're trying to access the flat file, the .log file on your own outside of the workbench. The entry server name open for e-business is the most important thing. Most valued thing you'll see in your start server and also your trace and system out log, indicating you're ready to go. You can locate your logs under the profile. So here we have, it's under your runtimes and profiles folder. QWPS is our profile name, logs, and then server one. And this is probably a great opportunity to mention that another place to remember to check while conducting your own troubleshooting is the .log file. And this can be found within the .metadata folder of your current workspace. And what this log file entails is basically activity within the workbench is captured there. And often you can identify some leads into runtime-related issues that you have encountered. Slide 15. So in the event that you attempt to start your server and it causes hanging, some recognizable performance degradation, or anything and everything you would consider abnormal behavior within your development environment, I've included some steps to take to capture info around this scenario. So what you would do is locate your Eclipse INI file within your root install folder. For example, the program files, possibly IBM and WID7. That's a typical naming. And so you would open this INI file in the text editor of your choice after very important first backing up this INI file in case you need to roll back to the original. And the argument for memory usage and allocation details for the workbench is verbose GC log, colon gc.log. And the colon is merely a delimiting character between the verbose option that we are essentially utilizing and the log file we are generating and pushing the resulting output to. And so this gc.log is created by default in the very same install location where the Eclipse INI resides. But you can specify an absolute path. The second command, which is very simply dump, will create a useful dump, and you accompany that by some forcible kill commands that you see at the bottom. And these dump files can be located also within your WID install location, same as verbose GC log. This dump command will only capture, however, a snapshot for what is occurring for each thread, so it's often essential that we run this multiple times, and then you can either yourself, if you feel comfortable, or support staff, and can run some comparison against first, second, and so on and so on. An important note here is that an observed delay does not always constitute or mean a hang, but also could be threads taking a little longer to execute. Slide 16. I struggle with the decision even to include this, but because it ventures outside of the WID workbench, but given we do advertise noticeable improvement in startup time, employing this property, decided to at least promote this briefly. So you can locate your service configuration and find the checkbox under General Properties at your configuration tab. Figure clearly illustrates where you would locate and make that modification. And I guess since you technically can access the administrative console from within Integration Developer, then I guess we can get away with discussing development modes. Slide 17. Startup behavior and expectations. I discuss here presented by definition hot deployment as an update of applications currently published on a running server without a restart. So those users that are proficient with admin console are quite familiar with these hot deploy type activities. So this is just a reminder that you do have this option available to you. And the figure in slide 7 specifically depicts regen of deploy code. So what you would do here is click projects in toolbar, then business integration projects, and select deploy, regenerate deploy code and reinstall on server. And so behind the scene, transparent to the user, there's a cleaning of the project selected and update on server. And then finally, an auto rebuild of your workspace. Slide 18, please. Alternatives to starting a server inside WID. And here is an example of your ANT option. And this slide shows packaging. And essentially, I wanted to isolate the WebSphere Core start server task. And at the very bottom, you'll find the critical line for your build XML being the task def entry. Slide 19. Here's an example of starting your server from the command line. And, of course, you can start with the most common approach being shortcuts created by the installer, start programs, or even as a Windows service, if that is your platform. Within the command line, you can find usage details. Slide 20, please. So a summary of what we discussed, some of the main points I would like the audience to take away. A profile is required to create a new server. So what I mean, and it's relatively straightforward, but a profile is necessary, absolutely necessary, to create and subsequently start a new server instance. And the PMT tool I explained can be used to amend the existing or create this new profile. Okay, edit configuration from editor provided within WebSphere Integration Developer or Administrative Console. And I'm asking that everyone remember that your server configuration is where you specify all properties for establishing communication between your server and the development environment. And the admin console must be accessed for changes to the master configuration on your server. For example, the tray specification, I didn't mention this earlier, but important to note, the tray specification is one of those properties that is typically modified via the console. Accept changes there, and you'll begin to see entries written to a new tracelog. All right, factors that influence startup behavior. We discussed the many contributing factors to server startup behavior, including but not limited to connection type, number of modules, runtime modes, trace settings, and then there are, of course, other factors. And so hopefully we can recall some of the alternatives to starting within WID, being the command line as a service, ANT task, and then troubleshooting tips. We already discussed the start server and system out log, and also explained the .metadata log being the place to go for investigating activity within the workbench. Slide 21. Here you'll find some additional WebSphere product resources, and I'll leave this here for a moment just for you to digest. Some upcoming WSTE Technical Exchange webcasts, and all of these are recorded for your consumption at a later time or conducive to your schedule. Trends in WebSphere technology. So DeveloperWorks is awesome. I mean, you can go there for complete end-to-end tutorials and usable samples, and also forums, so you can interact with other developers, other administrators. Join the global WebSphere community. Another way you can go about accessing demos and tutorials via the Education Assistant. Some of the webcast replays, step-by-step instructions for using the Service Request Utility. And finally, how to receive your weekly My Notifications so you can remain in the know. Slide 22. And here are the various vehicles to communicating with and connecting with us, Twitter, Facebook, and requesting you provide feedback and how we can do this better. Last slide, 23, Q&A. So that concludes my portion of this presentation. Thank everyone for remaining attentive, hopefully, and that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Kathleen, we would like to open the lines for questions.
At this time, I'm showing no questions.
Thank you, Kathleen. I see a couple of questions here in the group chat coming from Sanjoy, so I am going to announce his questions to the speaker. The first question is, given that laptops have limited memory, can we connect to a remote WebSphere application server instance? In that case, we have to manually edit the connection settings.
Yes. So what we want to do, and that was in one of my earlier slides, supplying you're fully qualified, when trying to access across, I guess, stringent, what I mentioned, stringent security settings, being a firewall, maybe even on a different subnet, then fully qualified, maybe even possibly an IP address, and you shouldn't have any problem establishing communication. The manual edit of the connection settings, I would recommend against hitting the flat files and actually playing around with the ports, et cetera, inside the flat files. But we want to try to administer via the UI or either the admin console if you selected to install one at installation time.
Thank you, Jason. And the second question is, during the presentation, were you demoing Integration Developer version 7.5 or 7.0?
Yes, very good question. This is actually specific to 7.0, so that's 7.0 base. There have even been some changes with maintenance levels, that's 2 and 3. So this is specific to 7 base. And also, I wanted to field one of the earlier questions, an earlier one about a one-to-one relationship existing between the profile and the server. And I do agree that it is likely a one-to-many relationship. A profile can be used for against different servers. But the spirit of my comment was that it's for a standalone. The test environments are not equipped to handle the complex topology like growing a cluster or a D-manager, those flavor of runtimes. So we usually have just a standalone instance, a standalone profile type, and use that one to instantiate a new server.
Great, Jason. So the next question is, the verbose GLOG settings are only for the Java W process running Eclipse and not for the WASP runtime. Is that correct?
Yes, it is specific to, it's one of the Eclipse-specific arguments. So you actually open up that file and you'll see VMARG. I believe, and I haven't looked recently, min and max allocation. So it's for the workbench. And so that Java W process is associated with the workbench.
And the next question is, if connecting to a remote WAS server, do you advise connecting through the ORB underscore bootstrap underscore port 28XX?
Yes, I'd advise using this for RMI port, but in the event that you do experience some connectivity issues in between, then just simply try another connection type, start up again, record your findings. If any type of feeling that there could be a port conflict, then Netstat, there are others, there's some utilities, I believe some Webster offerings that you can manage your ports. You can determine your ports from the administrative console and accessing your server instance. Each new server, I believe, iterates to the next available port. So it's done programmatically, but port management can be an activity that you have to be mindful of.
Thank you, Jason. And the last question is, if once the integration developer crashes, I see a lot of large files created in the WIT bin folder. How can we use that info for diagnostics?
Actually, you can try to go off and interpret this material yourself, but it's very cryptic. I would recommend that you engage IBM support to help you perform the diagnostics, run some comparisons with these dumps that are created in the bin. My apologies, in your root installation folder.
Perfect. Thank you again, Jason. And since we have no more questions in the Q&A, we will conclude the presentation at this point in time.